if I were to describe Brenno to all his might, it would take about half of his presentation, so I won't. So without further ado, here's Brenno de Winter.
Good morning. Today I want to talk about toxic workplaces in information security. And I chose this subject because there's something strange going on that we don't seem to be thinking about too much. I think that's wrong. If you look at, for instance, a CISO, in the United States alone, 73% has symptoms of burnout. Again, 73%. 91% have high levels of stress, moderate to high level of stress. This alone makes the psychological, social safety of these people low. On average, a CISO is in its place for 24 to 48 months. These numbers are not particularly encouraging that things are going fine. And if you look at information security, you see that the CISO is often treated as a black cat. For the ones that don't know me, I like cats, so you will see a lot of cats in this presentation for the simple reason that I can. Let's take one example, and we call this person Shaq. It's a case that really happened. But the story with Shaq has been anonymized for obvious reasons. He's on a short vacation, long weekend. And when he is at the beach, at his organization, it turns out that multiple email accounts have been compromised of one business unit. And somewhere between 10 and 15 accounts have been compromised. And he has everything well arranged, so there's somebody who should take over. But he turns out to be quite unreachable, and when he is being reached, the story is, yeah, sorry, my laptop is empty and I forgot to take my charger. I don't think there's a clear way to communicate. I don't want to be in this problem. So he joins the crisis call himself and starts to talk about it. And one of the advices that he gives is, what I were to do is to reset all the accounts. The organization did. They reset the 10 accounts or 15 accounts that have been compromised. And they sent an email to these people how to reset the password. So the criminals did. They used the link and locked out basically the legitimate users. It is discovered that there was an anti-phishing tool that they turned off because it gave too many false positives. And the business unit basically refuses any cooperation with the CISO. We'll deal with it ourselves. It's not that much of a deal. A couple of hours later, it turns out that out of these accounts, hundreds of thousands of emails have been sent. So the corporate domain is added to a number of blacklists. And Shaq is now frantically trying, you know, to get back to normal, get them off the lists, etc. He's actually very successful with it. And the same day he gets the organization off the blacklists. The accounts, of course, are this time reset. But the organization still refuses to reset all the accounts. And this is interesting, because when he says, like, okay, but this is also the time that we have to inform the board that there is an incident in the first place. He's being shouted and being said, you're threatening me, you're harassing me, stop doing that. It gets ignored. Saturday is kind of quiet. And on Sunday, all of a sudden, his manager invites him for a meeting. And of course, Shaq, diligently as he works, prepares a long list of items that he wants to discuss with this incident, how the investigation should go, etc. So it turns Monday. He shows up for work. And the manager starts to accuse him for the first thing, working while on holiday. The second thing he gets accused of is being too pushy. He shouldn't have said that he would inform the board. That type of blackmail is not being appreciated. The manager also raises the question if Shaq is actually, as a CISO, the one who should be dealing with incidents. And the latter one was he was incompetent because the advice to reset passwords is a bad advice. Because the manager asked somebody she knew, and that person said that after 24 hours, resetting passwords is a useless matter. So she asked Shaq to consider to step down. Shaq panics, doesn't know what to say, and he says, yeah, but I've got this meeting with these other organizations, and she says, well, then you just say that you're sick. Cite health reasons. He comes out of the meeting. We're kind of good friends, so he calls me. And the first thing I said was, okay, I hear your boss telling you that you're sick. Follow the advice and report sick. That's, under Dutch law, the best thing you can do in such a situation. Obviously, he burns out. He is sick. There comes a legal conflict, and ultimately the CISO has to leave the company. Or as we Dutch then generally say, he decided to leave the company. Let's just look what happened here. A small analysis. First off, in my world, security is a triangle. Regulation, organization, and technology. Let's start with regulation. If you're in an incident, you have reporting duties. So the advice to report it to the board, that is responsible at the end of the day, is a good one. If you look at the responsibilities, the world is excessively simple. Not the CISO is responsible. The top dog is responsible, the manager. And people who think that they are a CISO and a chief, if you're Dutch, go to the Kamer van Koophandel, the Chamber of Commerce, look at your company and see if you're listed as one of as the administrators. If you're not, you're not responsible. It's that simple. Now, if Shaq fucks up because it's unclear, it's his task to deal with incidents, so the responsibilities are vague, who is to blame? The manager. So who are you really, really angry at? If you're doing it correctly, the manager. And this is an issue, because Shaq was not talking to the board, he was talking to his manager. So as a chief, apparently you're not situated directly under the board, but you're situated under a manager. And this is one of the first things you see in toxic environments. If you give a warning, your warning gets filtered. It's a normal process because in many cases the CISO is positioned right underneath the CIO with different priorities. So your nagging is being filtered. From a security perspective, we can safely assume that the manager was basically incompetent. Because if you really think that resetting a password is a bad measure, that's strange. But more importantly, there's one golden rule in environments. If you're not at the table, you are on the menu. So Shaq wasn't a chief, he wasn't responsible, and one of the things was funny. At a certain point, his lawyer wanted to talk to me, and then he phoned me, and he didn't know that much about IT, and he said, like, I'm calling you on behalf of the CISO employee, and said, well, sir, before we start this discussion, one thing. You've just used a word that I will use in my book because this is so incredibly perfect. CISO employee, because that's what it in most cases is. Just one tip of advice. If you're not a chief, don't behave like you are the chief, because that's the quickest way to a conflict. The other thing, of course, and also Sjaak did this a bit, is when you talk to the board, don't talk tech, because they don't understand it, they don't get it. So if we talk about risk, think about what the board is all about. The board is about risk for the organization. That's what we should learn to explain. The board is not about the tech risk or CVSS score of things that we kind of find cool. I started off with a couple of statistics that basically makes very clear that the psychosocial environment of CISOs in general is harsh. Often the CISO is held accountable, but lacks the true authority to do its work. There is no real mandate, or there is no budget available. We have got this burnout risk, and a lot of organizations seem to confuse the responsibility they have with the CISO and use the CISO for scapegoating. And then have a look at us IT people in general. One of the cool things was when Sjaak's lawyer phoned me, the first question was, can you explain to me why, if you're at a holiday, you would want to work? Now, this was a lawyer for a union. So I went like, okay, you're a union man. I understand that this is really strange, but this is what we IT people do because we love our job. One of the major things, and it will be in the scientific part later if you have, for instance, an audit for the ISO 27001, or if you're with the government and you do a DigiD assessment, and things are not on paper, what we typically try to do is to fix things. We start to fill out the RASCII. Because it's not there, and we know that this will be a major. If you have a major, we will not be awarded a certificate, and that will be a problem. This is a big issue, because if you fill out a RASCII, you're sitting at the wrong table, because that's the table of management. They should determine who's accountable, who's responsible, who's supportive, who's consulted, and who is informed. If you do it yourself without their consent and you pass the audit, everybody is happy. If there is a conflict, they go like, that's so crazy. This CISO, they started to sit at my chair, think that I got themselves, and behave like one. They will use it against you. So it's not a good place to be. If you do things without the mandate, you're at risk. If we talk about toxic, it's pretty clear Sjaak's environment was totally toxic. And the guy did the right things, and this is how he ended up. We have to realize that it's not about us. In many cases, if you're in a toxic environment, it's very visible with security for the reasons I mentioned. But other places are unsafe as well. And because we are complaining and talking about risks, this is why we become the targets quite easily. But a toxic culture in general, the science says clearly it is a systematic problem. Work pressure itself is not a toxic environment. What is toxic in most cases is active undermining of your job, intimidation and clear sabotage. If you get any of these signals, you should be awake. And there's little or no room that you as a security professional make a mistake. And that generates in itself a culture of fear. And if people are afraid, they will stop talking about risk. If they stop talking about risks, we lose sight on the things that are really important from a security perspective. Now, I want to go through a couple of signals or signs of toxic behavior. And there are a couple of slides on that one. The first one is exclusion. It's a big giveaway. The moment you're not invited to meetings or say like, we'll contact you later, that is the first step of undermining. The second one is gaslighting. Like, ah, that's Willy. Willy is always dramatic. That's typically gaslighting. That's happening a lot. And one of the clear signals that something is major wrong is that management doesn't intervene as it happens from the first second. Sabotage by not doing things that were promised, or withholding information, or as I've once seen in an organization, there was a security structure, and in the audit on paper there was a total different security structure written down. The other one is micromanagement. I want to know everything about security, about software development, I don't give a fuck. Ignoring reports, people repeating the same issues over and over again, and mind you, this also leads to people who start doubting themselves that they might actually be crazy, when that's definitely not the case. Scapegoating, I've talked about that one already a lot. And the last one, tokenism. You're the CISO, you're very important, you're God, but you're not welcome at our meetings. So we give you all sorts of important words. And here's a big one. I don't like to say it, but there are CISOs that really thrive on titles. And that increases the problem, because you can shout to the world how important you are, and at the end of the day, you're totally excluded from everything. What happened to Shaq was also, and that's also a very important one, disqualifying his expertise. I, as a manager, feel obliged to call somebody else who knows something about security, which this person clearly didn't, and treat that external factor as being the ultimate truth. Implicitly saying, my staff doesn't know what it's talking about. We are professionals. So what I learned to do over the years now is a lot of times say like, this is my professional opinion. Make it very, very explicit. Then we have aggression and intimidation, which sometimes is like calling names, but also, you know, threatening to hit. I've seen it happen multiple times. Or even worse, somebody walking out of the room and slamming the door like an idiot. It is seldom that you see only one of these signals alone. It's a lot of times multiple of these things together. Then we have got one group of people that are hit more than average, and that those are females. And I think it's very important that we are aware of it at least and stop doing that. But one of the terrible things is mansplaining. Everybody in the room is a professional, you're a woman, so I need to explain what a port scan is. Or somebody saying something and then a man has to repeat it, and now all of a sudden it is my idea. Or extra doubt on the expertise of females. You see things happening like people having certain meetings, certain drinks. You know, if you go to the pub, this is where we make the real decisions. Certain sexist expressions. One of the worst I ever heard was, if you give her a couple of wines, you can tear her apart quite easily. But also the maternal wall bias. Somebody is under 30, might become pregnant, so we refuse access to promotions, or we refuse access to training, because that is money wasted. Let's be very short about this. In all cases, training is never wasted money. And maybe on one word on training, and it's not about training today, so I'll keep that really short. If you go to a soccer match, you see people who work 3 hours per week, and for the rest of their time they are training to be excellent. I give a lot of training, and I get people who once in every 3 to 5 years have a training. Our knowledge half time is 2 to 2.5 years. So we get dumber if you don't do training. So it's never a good idea to refuse it to anybody. One of the things that you get as a result of this, and I mean the result of all the things that I mentioned, is a lot of the fawn response. You've got fighting, fight, flight, freeze. And in the corporate environment, we also have the fawn response. And that is showing compliant behavior, being sweet, basically going along just not to stand out. And this is in psychology currently widely accepted. And then, and there is the rise of the toxic handler. Somebody who is not meant to take on certain roles, but does that anyway to, prevent stress from happening. For instance, a CISO jumping in front of his or her team to keep all the shit away and taking all the hits so that the team at least can do their work. It basically wars people out. And the stupid thing is, when it's happening to you that you're a toxic handler because you start to please the bullies, because that gives less conflict, you don't notice that it's happening. And for me it was that I only saw afterwards that I'd been a toxic handler. Because the only thing you want to do is to finish your job and make things happen. It wears people out. It breaks people. It burns people out. And it gives a lot of people moral distress. But it also takes down performance. It has a performance impact. It takes down performance a lot. A scientific study showed that if you're seated within 8 meters at your work of a bully, your productivity goes down at least 30%, at least. If you've got a non-toxic, healthy work environment, performance might go up to 15%, which means that the damage is far greater than the gains if things are perfect. Again, it's not an incident. And you often see that these patterns are being normalized. And I've said it already a couple of times. It is about management, not interfering. And it creates a security culture where nobody basically takes accountability, because you can't, because then I stick my head out of the field and it might be chopped down. I'm writing a book about information security in general, where this is a big part. And one of the things that I discovered when I talked to 150 CISOs is that only 5 were were aware that they have a job that is psychologically, socially high demanding. Dutch law mandates that you do investigations and risk analysis for people in such a job. From the companies that I spoke, a couple of these people hire CISOs as a service, for instance. Some of them are really proud on how good they are for their staff, and they were not doing this. Not because they wanted to break the law, but nobody realized. I think it's not a scientific number. I'm fully aware of that. 150 is not enough. But if 5 people recognize this, that's worrisome. 2 of those people said, like, yeah, I've got a right to such a questionnaire and physical medical examinations, etc. But I don't feel free to do so because my boss would be angry with me. One of the things that creates a toxic working environment has been studied by the International Labour Organization, part of the United Nations, is that structures aren't clear. Here we are again at Rasky. Who's responsible for what? If that's unclear, people are being uncertain, and that turns out to be leading to a lot of conflicts. With any problem, it starts by accepting that we have one, that it's part of our normal routines. One example was, for instance, at a certain point, somebody said, like, yeah, but at this company, it's kind of normal to shout at people. It's part of our culture. I wonder what kind of culture you want to create, but okay, this was part of their culture. But it has already been cultivated, so this is kind of deep, and this makes it a big problem as well. Ultimately, it hits the integrity of the organization. It's not only the victims that fall short of it, and sometimes even the bullies starts to be victimized because some of the people believe that they have to do it to be part of the just culture, that they think that this is just culture. We can't fix if we don't acknowledge the problem. So for my book, I did a lot of research over the last year, and one of the things that the parallels that I think that is valid, and have been validating this also with a lot of people in the airline industry and pilots, is that the airline industry has found out just culture. We Dutch have the doubtful honor to be one of the founders of just culture, because we had a toxic cockpit in Tenerife, where a captain kept on going when there was another plane at the runway. He got signals that something was awry, but he basically ignored them. I'm going really short. There were a lot of other communications issues as well. But it started the serious thinking about just culture. And just culture means that if somebody is speaking up or saying something about risk, that we start to take it first seriously, hear the person out, and be grateful that somebody has the courage to say something. And not start to gaslight immediately. It's the only culture that will work to build a form of trust where it is to report issues. It's okay that we made a mistake. And that's still in the airline industry kind of normal. It's okay that the plane crashes. It's not okay if it crashes twice for the same reason, not the same plane, obviously. But if it happens another time for the same reason, that's not okay. And the main aim of airline investigations is to banish the fault from the system. Oddly enough, this is what we do in IT as well. Plan, do, check, act. But we don't do it really. It should really be, okay, this was wrong, Now we need to do it differently. We need to be a part of that circle and do it better next time. I think really here is something where we can't learn. And I hear a lot also in discussions on issues like pen testing that people say like, yeah, but what we do is special. What we do is creative. What we do, I don't want to fly in a plane that has creative motor. I don't, maintenance, yeah. We don't do that. We want to go people by a checklist. We shouldn't be a checklist industry. I want my pilot to check his checklist on every step that is significant. We deal in binary shit, ones and zeros. And qubits, but things should be the same under the same circumstances. So I want people to run through standard procedures. Have we thought about everything? Did we do everything? Does it kill innovation? No, it doesn't. But we use innovation as an argument to mask that we don't want to be a grown-up industry. And I want to be in a grown-up industry. Because it's far more healthier and we stop burning people. Leadership and explicitly not management. I'm talking about leadership and as a CISO, as a security professional, as a privacy professional, you can be a leader. Really matters. Speaking up matters. Looking away, and I know it's difficult because I'm actually kind of shy on these type of things and some used to be very silent. But it sustains, it feeds toxic behavior because the bullies get away with it. And we should accept that psychological safety is not a luxury but a necessity to be able to do our job. And again, let's be honest about things that are not okay. There's nothing more fun than to fix what is broken. We've been doing that at camp the entire time, and this is our holiday. So one of the things that we need is, in Dutch, taken, verantwoordelijkheden, bevoegdheden, task, responsibilities and authorities. Who is responsible for what? And if somebody is not responsible and starts to bully, sorry, that's not your job. Or as a manager, when I was working at Philips in South Africa, once to a customer said when I was there, to a customer she said, you don't have the right to scaffold my people. That's my privilege. And crossing these boundaries is a big deal. And also for Rusky, if you don't have it and you don't know the structure, we know people get uncertain. If people get uncertain, they start to do stupid things. And if you're in a leading position, give security professional real mandates with real responsibility. And you can hold them accountable for that. Because we are grown-up people and we can do our job. And treat them for what they are, professionals. So what can we do from learning from the airline industry? One is normalize failure. I see, by the way, a lot of people taking pictures of the slides. Just contact me and you can have the slides. There's nothing secret here and there are a lot of cool cat pictures there. Mistakes are there for learning. That should be our basic attitude. And every voice is welcome at the right moment in the process. And the model should be as open as possible. There are no secrets where you're not a part of. You have to intervene very early. If there are early signs that could be toxic behavior, shout it out. And even if it turns out not to be toxic behavior, it's very good to prevent it from getting to that point. If there's sabotage, we should really, really address it. if somebody from security asks for the 10th time for a document that isn't given, that's a signal. And it should be like, okay, that's not okay. If you're down at, if you're down, and this is a big issue, you need somebody external. You can't fix it yourself anymore. If trust is broken, you're the party that is not being trusted. I once was in an organization, and it was very clear it was a toxic environment, and the management started claiming, yeah, our door is always open. Well, you're part of the problem now. So, no. We are a vulnerable profession. We should maybe, you know, say that once in a while. We are at a high stakes game. And we should always be there and say like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Don't cut me out. I need to be part of this discussion. Because security starts when you start designing the software, and security ends after the last data is deleted. And you have validated that properly. Don't label people. If a professional feels like a pain in the ass, start to ask yourself the question, what makes it that I get this emotion that it feels like that? Because we've got a lot of people that are not really good at communicating, but the core message might still be very valid and important. Now, if we go back to Sjaak, what is very clear in his workplace, there was role ambiguity. There were unclear responsibilities. There was no managerial support. Because what we do sometimes does hurt in the organization, and sometimes it's very hard to prevent it. Disrespect to the professional, undermining the autonomy, and at the end of the day, sacking him for doing his job. So in conclusion, you cannot thrive in a culture where silence or punishment is basically the standard story. We need inclusion, and we need to recognize the pattern. Again, we are not responsible. The administration is. And there's a very easy way to make a difference. Talk to the bully. And, you know, speak up on behalf also of the other people. And as we say here, of course, be excellent to each other. And if you are the bully, stop being the bully. Just say no. And I believe that at the end of the day, we can make cats safe again. Thank you. Are there any questions? Did I offend anybody? Or
it's no question, it's a comment. I totally agree with the things you described, but you can't Paracelsus law, which means everything is toxic. It depends on the doses, what is really toxic. Well, what I mean is, as a CISO, I can create a work environment for my team and the people who are working with me, but the external factors from the top management is often things what is part of a job description of a CISO. It's never written, but everybody who was in a CISO position knows that they don't want to hear the risk. I just want to add the information, and I'm sure most of the people are aware of it, and perhaps your comment, I would be interested, is that these communicating these risks, it's not play what everybody likes in the management. So in this direction, there's always fight.
Yes, no. Yes, there is always toxic behavior. But if you say like, I've got a, we did a pen test and this product has a CVSS of 8.0. The administration will not understand why this is important. If you say this system is being used to do the billing, if this is being abused and not available for a month, that means a month long no billing. That is something that at the end of the day, you know, hurts the organization. A lot of CISOs don't get to the point that it, yeah, but that it's, and for many, for a lot of managers, it's just fine to talk about risks if they understand the language. If you're at an organization that in general doesn't want to talk about risk, I only have one advice. Get the fuck away. Because with narcissists, you can't survive. Sorry to be so blunt.
Thank you for your presentation. I just wanted to hook into something you just said, is that it also connects to the comment just made. I can imagine that there are some situations which are so toxic where you're not able to effectively operate as a CISO or as a professional. I was wondering, is there something like a 10 checklist rule book of narcissistic workplace that you will include in your book before you get the job or somehow? Some checklist or... Because I think it's very hard to... It's like in a very toxic romantic relationship, I think. You're trying to change something, but it's inherently unchangeable in some way, or very hard to change.
Well, there's a very big giveaway, and of course not every organization has a Roski, but they have written it down differently. If you're starting as a CISO, you could ask, like, has it been written down? Do we know who's responsible for what? You can ask, like, very operational questions, and if the answer is no, can I start building that? And if the answer is, well, we have to see, you know, make it a very big point, because you know, not having Roski is one of the biggest factors that will, you know, ignite the fire of a toxic workplace. You sometimes also get the other signals, how the conversation is meant. Is somebody, you know, during the conversation already starting to cut other people off? This is what I don't want to hear. Or let me explain this. Those are also some giveaways to go. And sometimes, you know, you think you get to heaven and it turns out to be a light version of hell. This is why we have in the Netherlands the 2 months period where you can, you know, try and if you should stay at a job. And I've seen organizations where also an external person came and within a week said, okay, I'll help you till the end of the month and then I'm gone. If you're in a toxic situation and you want to leave, one of the good things is what you could do is immediately, as soon as you've taken the decision, start to communicate this, because psychologically you set yourself free of the responsibility and being in your role. And then you can still say, like, yeah, I'll stay another 2 months to fix things, but psychologically you're already free. That's a very powerful tool.
Hi, Bruno. Thank you so much for the talk, and I really liked the analogy to the just culture in the airline industry. I'm a private pilot myself, and I've experienced some making mistakes as you learn to fly the airplane, and also the decisions you take when going to fly with certain weather conditions or something that you don't really know, but you're stretching your ability, which is also that continuous training, building confidence in your own person. And I think that's also what you highlighted in the training, in the presentation. Now, learning from mistakes is really asking people what happened and not what did you do.
Yeah.
And really being objective in what just happened. Everybody gives their own story because they have different pieces of the information. And if you talk about what happened, you're not talking about putting blame. It's not about, what did you do? Oh, you just RM minus RF the whole root directory, right? Don't do that. But it's about making, letting people make the mistakes and then learn from those mistakes and let them make the mistakes that they don't have to pay the ultimate price for.
I'm a big fan of the failure mode effect analysis because that's what we're looking for, the failure mode. And if somebody made a mistake, what placed this well-thinking person in a position that they started to make the plays? I also took a couple of lessons because of the book I was writing, which is cool, in Rotterdam. So, yeah. But the just culture is, I think, the only way out. There's one other thing that you're hinting at, but just didn't say. Root cause analysis is not a half a sheet of paper half filled with some bullshit story. It should really be, what are the failure modes that led to this failure? And unfortunately, I still meet incidents where at the end of the day, the evaluation is not being ordered by the customer because that's a waste of money. Now, that's the most valuable part of your entire incident.
So I'm not a CISO, but I work in the software industry. I left my last environment because it was toxic, and I really relate to what was in your talk across multiple different companies. Thank you. For my next role, I'm looking for a good culture. Is there, like, does somebody have like a list of places I can apply to, or just like something? Because the bad places will lie to you on the way in, right? They don't necessarily either acknowledge they're bad or they just lie, knowing that you'll join and then you might accept the environment. It just feels like a really difficult problem. It's much harder for me than any software problem I've ever dealt with, is dealing with this culture issue.
I don't have that list. Before I did the talk, somebody of a organization called me and said, like, you're not allowed to talk about us. So that was very interesting. Yeah, so I asked the question, why would you think that I would talk about your organization? Yeah, use your senses, be excessively sensitive and try it out, because it's very hard. And sometimes actually fighting the bullies does work, and it does change the culture. And amazingly, there are a lot of people who keep silent who all of a sudden feel relieved. So it is possible to change the culture sometimes, but be sensible.
Hi, Breno, thanks for your presentation. I'm a dog person, but I really like
what?
The cats in your presentation. My question is, you talk about clear responsibilities, and when I work with Dutch governments, I often find that those responsibilities, that's really tough in the government situation. Do you have practical help on how to deal with that based on your experience?
Yeah, but that's of course a talk on itself, so let's meet afterwards there. One of the clear examples that I dare to say is there's a CISO for the province of Zeeland, Hans Quist, and he seems to have these kind of things pretty well worked out. And the funny thing is, when I was asking about the risk analysis for psychosocial environments, and I was like, do you know what that is? Oh, yeah, we were offered that. So all of a sudden, that was in place as well. So that could be an example on how to do it. But it is a struggle to get that ROSCE filled in, because it feels like homework. But especially from a government, I was amazed to find out that is not automatically the case. Because in laws, we are very strict who's responsible for what. Yeah, and after that, we make just kind of a mess of it. Yeah.
Thank you, Breno, for this. Thank you for this presentation. If they have more questions, where can they find you?
I'm at Dutch Picnic a lot, come to there. If you want to talk about it, we've got tables and we are sweet.
All right, thank you. We have 30 seconds for more applause for Brenno.